Hello, friends. Today is the 12th of September, 2017, and I'm up here, Tui and I are up here in the Little Bear Meditation Center, which is, after all, rather little, even though there are quite a number of little bears sitting outside on the porch and in other places. So if you hear occasional sounds, other than myself, you know, vacuum cleaners and other things like that, it'll be because Tuya and her cousin are doing some work here, and our soundproofing is not complete. So we're just functioning as best we can. Now, as you know, for the Blue Rose Sisterhood Initiation Mystery Week, we did some work on the first three initiations, and I actually have some material on the first and second initiation as well. I've been sending you the third initiation material because I got a silent movie out of it when I first did it with the class. Something was not pressed properly, and as a result, there was no sound recorded. Well, I've tried to make up for that and done rather more on this series of programs than I was able to do during the Initiation Mystery Week. I figured that it might be of value for us all to go over this, and not only the Blue Rose Sisters. We've been emphasizing the whole theme of initiation at the conferences, and you know, some of you may be interested in coming to our forthcoming conference, 2018. And we'll be, you know, continuing that kind of work, because the better that we fit ourselves for the initiatory process, and only we can really do that. I mean, no one is going to be initiated until the requirements have been fulfilled. Well, then the better we can serve those who are up and coming in their consciousness. This is our hope, of course. That we can work from within and help to raise the level of human consciousness from a spiritually occult perspective. I always throw in the word spiritually because, you know, the word occult sometimes has a bad name and it can be used for very personal reasons. Well, we're not doing that at all. We're studying the spiritual occultism from the perspective of the soul, and which is the one of the higher selves. You know, it's our next focus in higher selfhood. There are still other foci, of course, but we're learning to raise our level of identification to an altogether higher level, and to make sure that the teaching of Master DK is more to us than just words. If you see me with a scarf around my neck here, it's because autumn has come here in the Arctic, and it can be a little chilly with the winds blowing. Of course, nothing like the winds that we've had in the Florida and Texas, but still, the Arctic is the Arctic. Sort of like being on the top of the world, you know? But not quite the North Pole. Okay, so we're just, this is a compilation, which actually was made a long time ago, maybe even 16 years ago. And there's a bigger compilation, which I'll get into after we finish this one. And if I do so well as to recognize the material I've already commented on, then I won't do that again, unless there's something really new and significant to say, which I didn't say before. So here we're at number 55, and this is discussion number 7. The third initiation, therefore, releases the initiate from the planes of unprincipled substance, the lower subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. Now, you know, we can look at that as the lower 18 subplanes, in the case of the planetary logos, or the lower 21 subplanes in the case of the solar logos. At least it's my theory that when dealing with the higher mental plane, it means something spiritual to the planetary logos, but it is really quite physical to the solar logos. So the third initiation is releasing us into the higher mental plane. And it's not really releasing us into something beyond that, although we begin to study and apply ourselves to know what the intuition really is and to organize the Buddhic vehicle, in most cases, decisively after the third initiation. So we're being released into greater ability to focus on the higher mental plane after the third initiation, and therefore we should be able to have what DK found so very lacking in most meditators, causal focus, causal consciousness, the ability to focus the consciousness in the causal body. So this is the diagram here, and maybe I can, yeah, here are the three subplanes, which are the higher mental plane, and the lower 18 are the mostly unprincipled, unprincipled subplanes, cosmically considered. Of course, they are subplanes of subplanes, because every one of our systemic planes is a subplane when you consider the cosmic physical plane. And these are the subplanes of the subplanes. In other words, the mental, well, to the solar logos, the entire mental plane is a subplane, cosmically considered. And here we have four planes of the concrete mind, which is a sub, which are subplanes, cosmically considered, or systemically considered. See, there are cosmic subplanes or cosmic subplanes, and then there are systemic or solar. Those two things are equivalent. You know, when we say solar and systemic, we mean the same thing when we're talking about the planes. Okay, goodness, goodness. I wonder what this will do. Oh, it makes it even bigger. All right, live and learn, right? All right, so. Now, the next two initiations make it possible for him to work with intelligence and love on the two lower levels of the cosmic etheric plane, the Buddhic and the Atmic. The Buddhic plane we know to be a plane of love. There we find harmony and love, wisdom, and pure reason, and a number of those nice second-ray, fourth-ray states. And the Atmic plane, being the third, is not only a plane of will in the Brahmic sense, because it's the height of fivefold Brahma, but it's a plane of intelligence, because it's the third subplane of the cosmic physical plane. We just have to get our numerology straight there as much as possible. Whilst the next two initiations make it possible for him to work with intelligence and love on the two lower levels of the cosmic etheric plane, the Buddhic and Atmic, and the planes of spiritual love and intelligent will. I think those are very good ways of describing the Buddhic and Atmic plane. And wouldn't you know it, I didn't set my chronometer, so now I'll do that, and any chance of having this program be exactly an hour is now lost. Well, in any case, I'll come as close as I can to making an hour program, and if for some strange reason I decide to make it a 2-hour program, well, the odds are against me for finding any kind of exactitude. Well, we try to reach into this plane of Buddhi. We may talk loosely about Buddhi, but really it's only cultivated in terms of the coordination of the Buddhic vehicle after the third initiation. And I suspect if we simply follow along analogically, that this intelligent will or spiritual will, as we call it, and which pertains to the atmic or nirvanic plane or subplane, you know, here are some of the names of it: atmic plane, third cosmic ether, etheric plane of the third logos, Brahma, and so forth, that it will take after the fourth initiation for real cultivation of that to occur. But occasionally, I think we may experience the spiritual will as a great wave of irresistible, driving energy, oblivious to all things except that sense of direction and overcoming time and space, as the Tibetan so beautifully describes the definition in the definition of the will. Occasionally, we may be swept with that, but it's not a common thing, and even to be swept with buddhi is not a common thing. However much we might talk about it, you know, there comes a time in the development of the egoic lotus when the buddhic energy fills it more completely than at the beginning of the process, and then it becomes a living center on the higher mental plane, and the second aspect of divinity is particularly cultivated. And you know, that will probably start when the focus of the egoic lotus moves on to the second subplane of the higher mental plane, rather than being on the third, where it all begins millions of years ago. Okay, so that's the idea there, and basically what we're doing here is trying to turn that which is unprincipled into that which is principled. That means rightly directed according to the theme and the purposes of the second major solar system. That particular energy was not strong in the previous major solar system. It was the energy of intelligence, and now all that has been conditioned by intelligence and left over, so to speak, at the end of that solar system, the previous major solar system, has to be reconditioned, which means rendered responsive to principle. You know, and of course, it has its analogy when we think about human behavior and we ask of a person or about a person whether that person is principled or not, whether they are responding to higher directives, or whether they are simply responding instinctually and unaligned with the higher purpose. So, you know, hopefully, after many hard knocks, we all turn into principled human beings in the occult sense. All right, going on then. So that was from Ray's End, the Initiations, 359 to 360. This is also from Ray's End, Initiations. It's the last book that was made, or the last set of lessons that was made into a book, and of course, one cannot help but strongly recommend it. You know, it's a very necessary book, very necessary. And it's the kind of book which, well, we can't say, okay, Alice Bailey published these things in the early 20th century up to the middle, and now we've outgrown all that, because we're dealing with material from the Library of Shambhala. Like to have that library card, wouldn't you? Although it'll probably be difficult to read what's there. Master DK has access to these things as a major messenger of the hierarchy, and we cannot look at the time in our century, or the last century when it was released, as limiting its value for the future. I suspect that all during the group age, the age of Aquarius, these 14 rules for disciples and initiates will be strongly studied, maybe with some elaborations and an increase of interpretation from Master DK. But how can we ever say that they would not be extensively studied, especially since a roughly 25,000 year age of Aquarius is coming up, starting at a time that we cannot determine, but soon. Our astrology can't determine that, but DK says we're right in the transition period into this great age. And so I would think that all of these rules from Shambhala about how to achieve true group consciousness will be extant and useful for a long time. Okay, anyway, moving on. As you know, the first human being out of that center, which we call the race of men, to achieve this point was the Christ. And I suppose it's a very high initiatory level. I'm not, he is the eldest of a great family of brothers, and he is leading earth chain humanity to high achievement. Now, the Buddha achieved before he did, but the Buddha was moon chain humanity. And there are others that achieved the high level of the Christ and beyond, but they are moon chain humanity, or perhaps even those who came from a previous solar system. So there have been many, many achievements before the Christ became the Bodhisattva, or before the Buddha became the Bodhisattva. But we're interested in modern humanity and in the teachers who are for us the major teachers from whom we have to learn and under whose guidance we have to progress. Of course, everything is an upward turning spiral. And thanks to Master DK and maybe some of our own thought, we're able to benefit from what some of the earlier teachers have taught and find it to be included in what our latest teachers, the Christ and the Buddha, are teaching. So the Christ was the first of our earth chain humanity, that is, those who individualized in the fourth round on this earth, or within this earth chain. In that first great demonstration of his point of attainment, through the medium of what was then a new type of initiation, the Christ was joined by the Buddha. Now, I think that what they're going to be talking about here is the taking of the third initiation by both the Christ and the Buddha together in a fourth ray ashram. That's what I suspect is coming up here. Sometimes I just start reading the paragraph and don't pre-study it and allow the fact that I have studied before to guide me. We know how strongly the fourth ray is related to the second ray, and there are quite a few people who do transfer onto the second ray from the fourth ray, but there are also those who do not, and they remain on the fourth ray. And the DK talks about their fate being different and their path being different. There are all these marvelous intricacies of the way to go in the higher life, but we just have to get ourselves to the point where we can control our astral body and think clearly and work with the mind held steady in the light of the soul. The Buddha had attained this same point prior to the creation of our planetary life. But in other words, what we would call this is readiness for the third initiation. But conditions for taking the third initiation were not then available, and we know, well, we know for the individual, and maybe for more than that, for the individual, there must be the right astrological conditions involving his chart. And maybe this is true planetarily as well. And there will be certain ray strengths required. So, you know, there are internal conditions here that can determine whether or not an initiation can be taken. At least for the Buddha, it could not. Although earlier in the moon chain, I do believe that the third initiation could be taken, and somewhere I may have read, I'll have to check it, that even the fourth initiation could be taken in that chain. But, you know, we're talking now about the end of that chain and the fact that it had to be interrupted by the intervention of the Solar Logos because process was going in the wrong direction. And I guess the planetary logos in that particular incarnation could not stop it, having initiated it and through what's called premature compassion. At this initiation, and since then, for all initiates of that degree of attainment, they stood in the presence of the one initiator, the Lord of the world, and not in the presence of the initiate who was then the head of the hierarchy. And, you know, let's, you know, obviously, it was not the the Christ or the Buddha, but there were others who were head of the hierarchy, you know, and there's been that upward climbing spiral with respect to the qualifications of those who were head of the hierarchy. So, but we're looking back in it Atlantean days, you know, and since those who came from the moon chain into our chain came in the third sub-race of the fourth root race, we're talking millions of years ago. How many millions? I'll leave it to my friend Philip Lindsay to determine with greater degree of accuracy than I can. This third initiation was taken in a fourth ray ashram, the ray of harmony through conflict. Obviously, you can take an initiation, any initiation in any ray ashram, although probably the ray determines something of the qualifications and the way those qualifications express themselves. I've thought of trying to write about this. It would be largely speculative, you know. I mean, you know, what's it like to take the third initiation as a sixth ray soul, as a third ray soul, as a fourth ray soul? You know, what's it like? And I think it would be a worthy project. Speculative, yes, you know, and not just the third initiation, but the fourth and the fifth, and, you know, and the earlier initiations of the threshold. Obviously, one is taking them on one's soul ray. And it's not so that at the third initiation, all soul rays switch on to the first, second, or third. They might. Some of them might switch on to those higher rays of aspect, but not all. Otherwise, the Tibetan would not have given the method of destroying the causal body on any of the seven rays. So, you know, that's a little thing that's kind of bothering me a little bit, prodding me, maybe I should say, to do that and see if it opens up any area of thought. And it would be most interesting to consider what is the kind of sacrifice, a fourth initiation sacrifice, through which any soul ray type has to pass. In the law of repulse, which really kicks into action after the third initiation, some idea is given of the loss which is experienced by each of the ray types. You know, the garden is destroyed for the first ray type, or the passages of the mind are destroyed for the second ray type, and on it goes, with everything you counted on being destroyed by the higher light, the higher love, the higher will the higher possibilities. Okay, that's not to say that the law of repulse stanzas as presented can only be applied to those who have taken the third initiation. I think in the second initiation period, or even really on the initiatory path, there's many things which are repelled, which do not pertain to the kind of growth, which soul growth, which must be managed. This third initiation was taken in the fourth ray ashram. Okay, this ashram had taken form and attained functioning activity sometime earlier. Now DK gives the order in which the ashrams appear, and I wonder if I would be so lucky as to find that, without terrible amount of search. So if I open the book and press here the raised initiations, and then go to I think it goes like this, 2 7. Oh, I'm not doing very well. I'm not doing very well here. No. Well, the order of the ashram's appearances. I thought it was 2 7 4. How they go, 2 7. I'm getting better now. 4. Yes, getting better. There it is, or will be, or perhaps. I don't want to. There it is. All right. 2 7 4 6 5 3 1. So this gives some idea. By the time the fourth ray ashram is being organized, maybe we're out of Lemuria altogether. Maybe none of these ashrams was organized in the ray sense in Lemuria. I don't know, but obviously, if we had to wait at least until the third subrace of the fourth root race for this kind of initiation to be taken, and for the moon chain types to come in, including the Buddha, I suppose, then that fourth ray ashram was going to be organized, it looks like, in Atlantean times, when the Tibetan says had been organized sometime earlier. That doesn't sound like a great length of time, but a respectable length of time. Okay. A lot of ancillary things which can be suggested by what the Tibetan says. So what did we have here? Let's just get the order in which the ashrams appear just for fun. Keep them there. Okay, so there they are. Okay. Sometime earlier. Something human being in the fourth kingdom of nature. Let's see, sometime earlier. Now I have to find that because I've lost something here. Some time earlier, and there's only one of them. Yeah, you can see. Here it is. Here it is. One of these got cut off. You can see under the law of correspondences why this would be so. Okay, so let me put that in. You can see under the law of correspondences why this would be so, and what I'll do is just make that black. Sorry for a little bit of technical talk here. You can see under the law of correspondences why this was so. The first human being in the fourth kingdom of nature to take this initiation, that is, earth humanity, did so in a fourth ray ashram, and then esoterically speaking, the way lay open towards the cross, and the cross would allow mastership, right? Okay, so the way, okay, I'm gonna do my best here. The way of the cross opens up the fifth initiation, or mastership. So, symbolically speaking, all these fours, this numerical resonance tells us apparently why it is that the Christ took the third initiation in a fourth-ray ashram as the foremost representative of Earth humanity's fourth kingdom of nature. Okay. So the way lay open toward the cross. The initiate faced the process of extension on the cross. It reminds one of philosophical extension and of the reduction of that extension to the point. So I'm going to say this reminds of philosophical extension and its reduction at the fourth degree to the point. And from that vantage point, could view the three worlds. The fourth initiation then became a possibility. Now, here's the question. And I guess, he hints that what I said earlier may not be true. Maybe it could not be taken in the previous chain. And maybe the third initiation was the top of the initiatory possibilities in the previous chain. The crucifixion faced the disciple of the third degree with its promise of complete liberation and final resurrection. Well, there's a kind of resurrection dramatized, I think, by the Christ and the Master Jesus following the crucifixion, but there's also that amazing resurrection which was pertaining or does pertain to the seventh degree. You can just see how these paragraphs are amazingly packed, with information and implications. At least we understand that the cooperation of the Buddha and the Christ is very old. It's like there's some people that think that there's a huge difference between them, but as Gemini brothers, you might say, they've been cooperating for millions of years and have known each other for millions of years, serving the hierarchy. So that is an adjustment in thought which many adherents of the various forms of Christianity may have to take in as the East and West meet in complementarity rather than in religious antagonism. I once talked to a Buddhist monk, was it in China? May have been in China or it may have been in Kathmandu. And of course, one has the idea that all Buddhist monks are enlightened, but it wasn't the case. And you can talk to priests in the Christian church, the parallel of the monks, and the enlightenment and the inclusiveness is not there. Well, we who are intending to be light bearers here have to promote this type of enlightenment, if we possibly can, the inclusiveness that promotes a new form of enlightenment, a new form of realization. Okay, well, obviously, it's good to read the book straight through the way it is, and I'm kind of doing that, and I'm working on the rays and initiation that I'm almost finished, and the first part of the book was done in writing and typing and all that, and the second part of the book in these video commentaries. So at least I'm getting a chance to go through very sequentially, but now we're targeting with topical study the third initiation. And it's one that we really have to think in terms of during the Aquarian Age because it's an important sign when it comes to taking the third initiation. That and Capricorn, both of them important. Okay, going on. This Antikarana, the Antikarana is the product of the united effort of the soul and personality working together consciously to produce this bridge. So, what we get the idea of is the solar angel cooperates, and the higher part of the ego or spiritual triad, maybe I shouldn't make that a total capital, also cooperates. So we are, it is the, it's the, it is the soul-infused personality, which I wonder what would happen if I did. Okay, slip. Nope. Soul-infused. Let me try a different one. Soul-infused personality, which projects into the into the higher triadal worlds. And when it is complete, there is a perfect rapport between the monad and its physical plane expression, the initiate in the outer world. So, let it be understood. Whoa, what happened there? I better go backwards. Let it be understood that the monad is reached. It's let's just say between the monad, and I'll say this, not just the spiritual triad, and its physical plane expression of the initiate in the outer world. So, we become the the walking monad. We become the walking monad in extension, or maybe put it a little more dignified way, we become the monad in extension in the lower three worlds. The third initiation marks the consummation of the process, and there is then a straight line of relationship between the monad and the lower personal self. Now, this is interesting and important, but it does not represent the completed Antikarana. This is an alignment, but not a complete alignment, unless we call the third initiation the fifth initiation, because by then this will be true, and maybe even, well, there has to be absorption of the entire extended Antikarana, the entire extended monadic projection into the monad by the time of the sixth initiation. So anyway, the third initiation marks the consummation of the process. At least then there's a straight line of relationship between the monad and the lower personal self. I want to say here though, but it intensifies over the next three initiations. And beyond that, when we're dealing with the sixth degree and beyond, the monad itself is considered the peripheral element, which has to rise into larger identification with the group of monads, I would say. But the monad is the complete world as far as all initiations below the sixth. Okay. The fourth initiation marks the complete realization of this relation by the initiate. Okay. The initiate is in conscious contact with the Father. It enables him to say, "I and my Father are one." Now, you begin to, I suppose, at times when we're studying Sanatkumara and identification between the second and third initiation, we begin to get the hint about this. And after the third initiation, that hint is really shaping up towards a realization, but the fuller realization comes at this time, but not ultimate, at least in my view. All one can do is present one's view and the reasoning that goes with it. It is for this reason that the crucifixion of the great renunciation takes place, and we might say, to allow a far more complete rapport with the monad. Forget not that it is the soul that is crucified, well, certainly on the fixed cross, this is so, and also the painful process of the individualized soul becoming consciously the monad, a very great expansion. I mean, soul consciousness is very wide compared to our personality consciousness, but think of the stretch in a way. Well, I'll put it like this. I'll go backwards here. So I'll say, think of the stretch from unity to oneness, and we should not imagine that there is no pain in this process. Yeah. Well, my little chronometer clock is playing tricks on me here. If I come anywhere near the intended length of this program, it'll be a bit of a miracle. But we'll see how it goes. So, anyway, let's just say the importance of the fourth initiation is really emphasized. The importance of the fourth initiation for a monadic realization is here emphasized. And I can only imagine, you know, and I think you can too, that with the fifth degree and we're even closer to the monadic consciousness, and at the sixth degree we're really there, but there are higher forms of monadic consciousness. We cannot imagine that encapsulation within the vehicle of the monad at the sixth degree is finality, because the monadic vehicle is destroyed at some point, the so-called Temple of Ezekiel. And then you have an issue of what that volatile essence really is when liberated from that particular body in which it finds itself, and the journey that the volatile essence takes on the way of higher evolution. And, you know, it's got to lead to ever deeper degrees of being, you know. I just want to say that there are ever deeper degrees of being. I know, you know, some people imagine that enlightenment is for humanity some kind of final thing. Well, maybe for humanity it is, but that which is human transfigured, translated, whatever, into something greater than the human being, enters a higher hierarchy. And so the type of realization of being, which is pertinent or achievable by a human being, is left behind as the higher identifications occur. So we have to be humble enough to think, at least, speculate at least, that ever deeper layers of being lie ahead of us, and that there's no ultimate realization which comes to the human being. I mean, I can't imagine that the identification as being of a solo logos is the same as a human being can achieve. To me, it doesn't make sense, but let's see as we go along the road, along the way of higher evolution, what actually is the case. All these things about which we speculate are going to be things that we experience and will become knowers and not just speculators. Okay, going on. It looks like we're more or less in the same area. Okay, there we go. Initiation is only a ceremony insofar as there comes a climaxing point in the initiatory process in which the disciple's consciousness becomes dramatically aware of the personnel of the hierarchy and of his own position in relationship to it. So it's an event in a long prepared process. And I suppose different members of the hierarchy become recognizable depending upon the initiation being taken. I mean, the Lord of the world is not recognizable to the first degree initiate in anything like the same way as he is to the third degree or fifth degree initiate or fourth degree. There we are standing finally at the fifth degree face to face. Well, that's not the case in the first and second initiations. And the Christ begins to assume a subsidiary position rather than the main position in these later major initiations. So we have to think in terms of the continuity of development over a number of lives and not just as some sort of crowning. In human life, the queen or king may decide to make you a knight, and you go through the ceremony and you're dubbed a knight, and you can use the word sir before your name and so forth. But this is simply a reflection of a much more occult process. Of course, it may be that as a human being, to reach the process where you are recognized by the royalty or authorities of your country, you had to go through a great deal of growth and development. So nothing comes out of the blue. Nothing is conferred without someone really earning it. Of course, the degree of earning is going to be deeper when we come to the occult accolade and the occult conferral of the degree through the rod of initiation and the initiator, of course. This realization, he symbolizes to himself successively and on an increasingly large scale as a great rhythmic ceremonial of progressive revelation in which he as a candidate is the center of the hierarchical stage. And what a tremendous hint is here given about what that initiatory process really is. In other words, we might say, in a way, initiation is self symbolization. So, do these things really occur on the inner planes, or is it possible to access somehow great internal designs which the qualified individual symbolizes to himself? There's something about the soul there and about the inner powers of the human being to lay out a process which not only is interesting and elevating, but which actually accesses new energies and reveals new energies which can be used. So I would say, there are a few little mysteries here about this initiation process and the way in which it is real. So anyway, gradually over time, at a certain point in this lengthy process, he becomes, notice the word dramatically, because that has to do with ceremony. this word. This is a ceremonial word, dramatically aware of the personnel of the hierarchy and of his own position in relationship to it. This realization he symbolizes to himself successively and on an increasingly large scale as the initiations progress in their elevation and their significance, as a great rhythmic ceremonial of progressive revelation in which he, as a candidate, is the center of the hierarchical stage. I would just say, let's see, let me get this correct. We know so little about the powers of the soul to dramatize inner events. Well, we know something about it in terms of dreams, somehow sometimes the soul is responsible for sending a dream or somehow offering a dream which has great teaching value, as Master DK tells us. But on the other hand, we're used to the idea that Sanat Kumara is there, that the Buddhas of activity are there, and so forth. There's something about the soul's power to symbolize which accesses these higher beings. I'm just, this is speculative, but I offer it. There is something about the soul's power to access the presence of higher beings and to lay out the event, the inner event, according to spiritual law. And see, this doesn't mean that Sanat Kumara is not the initiator, but how many places can he appear simultaneously? Well, maybe many. There's something about our inner powers which can access the arrangement that we've read about so interestingly in Initiation, Human and Solar. Okay, anyway, moving on a bit here. This is definitely so from the ceremonial angle in the first two initiations and in relation to the Christ as the initiator. This self symbolization process, especially for the first two initiations. There are other distinctions. After the third initiation, the ceremonial angle lessens in his consciousness because the higher initiations are not registered by the mind with its ability to reduce realization into symbolic form. Now, note that power of the mind and how the initiation may appear to the consciousness of the initiate passing through them. So a higher aspect is being touched. Let's say an aspect higher than the mind is being touched and is having higher energies conferred upon it and thus transmitted to the brain. So in other words, before that, after the third initiation, there's less of the symbolic aspect because the mind is not involved, something else, something higher is involved. And part of this symbolization is the transmission to the brain. Excuse me. But they reach the brain and are there registered via the Antahkarana. So the Antahkarana is an instrument. Is also an instrument of registration of events, spiritual events occurring on levels higher than the mind. Oh, this is very rich material, isn't it, friends? Just extremely rich material. After the third initiation, the ceremonial angle lessened in his consciousness because the higher initiations are not registered by the mind with its ability to reduce the realization into symbolic form and thus transmitted to the brain. but they reach the brain and are registered via the antechrona. So there is brain consciousness of the higher initiations. There is, however, brain consciousness of the higher initiations. And whether that brain is a part of the vehicle of a naturally born human being or is a Maya Virupik brain, perhaps. The results of the experience of expansion are now definitely of such a nature that they cannot be reduced to symbols or to symbolic happenings. Okay, let us remember this. The use of symbols only goes so far, as they are formless and remain in the higher consciousness. Now, let's just say the formless worlds begin with the spiritual triad. But then, let's see, there are on the cosmic physical plane formless forms. And Plato, when he was discussing the very high archetypes, he called them the forms. And I suppose they came from the monadic plane. So even though they are not symbolic forms of the kind that we are used to when our concrete mind reduces higher impression to certain symbols and shapes, they are, in a way, forms, energy forms. And DK does describe these even in relation to the logoic plane when he's talking about Shambhala as a world of light and the different kinds of geometries that you are finding there. Well, okay. I'll just do one more, and then just to keep myself from going on, I will say this is the end of Third Initiation Discussion, number 7, 12, September 17, almost 13 now. And for some of you, it will already be the 13th, and beginning of Third Initiation. Whoa, how about spelling, huh? How about that? Number 8. At a time, well, let us see when that time will be. So, gosh, I just feel the compulsion to try to milk these paragraphs of all they can possibly reveal. Of course, it's a hopeless task, If we're a master or something, we could maybe come closer to the objective. But it is interesting to realize that there is a type of expansion, a type of realization which really goes beyond form. So I just want to say, but in general, let us realize that there is a type of expansion which transcends what we usually call form, a form which is produced by the mind in reaction to the conferred energies. So symbolism will take us so far, and then we do enter the abstract worlds. Now, none of us live in the abstract worlds right now, maybe as monads we do, but the masters do live in these worlds of abstraction, and so these ideas really mean something to them, something experiential. This third initiation is the one in which the spiritual man demonstrates his complete control of the personality. Well, let us say that this statement should give pause to many claimants of the third initiation. Obviously, we can't really claim initiation because it kind of proves the opposite. But this complete control of the personality, well, who's going to claim this? Out of those we know and of those who claim it, who is going to be validated in the claim? It's a slow process in time, even though time essentially does not exist, but it is experientially actual, we might say. The physical body has been controlled through the medium of the physical disciplines. Okay. The emotional nature has been reorganized and made receptive to spiritual impression coming from the plane of pure reason, the Buddhic plane, through the transforming process of the mind, or the fifth principle. Now, this has been done. In this connection, the mind has acted as the organizer of the astral reaction and as a dispeller of glamour. The disciple is now focused in his everyday consciousness upon the mental plane, and even, the higher mental plane at times, and the triangular relation of the three aspects of the mind upon this plane is now dominant. So what do we have here? The mental unit, the sun of mind, and the abstract mind. Son of mind, I just want to call it son of mind, higher mind. And there's the triangle there, and you can see that on any. Here's the triangle, sort of to the egoic lotus, from the mental unit to the egoic lotus, and thence to the monastic permanent atom, which is the seat of the abstract mind. And this is assuming that the triangle is completed by the antikarana. Well, the complete control of the personality. Just follow yourself as the observer and see if there are areas which are not yet under control. And maybe you will find them. Of course, it's not perfection that is achieved at the third initiation. There is a kind of stability which, although one is affected by certain energies, those lower energies or forces, those lower forces are not allowed to inhibit the process of spiritual attainment, a spiritual purpose, the objective before the becoming third degree initiate, and even the third degree initiate. There are failures of the third degree initiates, the rich young man syndrome, I love my causal body so much I don't want to give it up. I don't want to step into that experience of denudation, which seems to take everything away, but really translates it into a higher energy focus within the spiritual triad. Well, look, we'll go on with this. We only have, in this particular compilation, not too many more paragraphs. Not many more. I think we finish this the next time, and then I'll have to make up my mind. I'll take a look at that very complete third initiation compilation and see what's there that's not here and how it might be of value to discuss. So meanwhile, thank you for studying along with me and thinking along with me. And as I've often said, if study groups are very important. And if you have study groups on these matters, You can use the videos and just stop them at any point and then discuss what you might want to discuss. And I'll offer some thoughts, and if they're of value to discuss, then do. And if they're not, then just pass them by and go on to the next thing. And in that way, I think we can all grow in our understanding and our appropriation of the higher light. Okay, many blessings, everybody. We'll see you before long. Bye-bye.